Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to find out how adding artichoke to your diet can help prevent gum disease. Nihon University School of Dentistry in Japan. We'll also have about 15 other health stories. Then, a special commentary. We believe that if there's a time to challenge authority, it is now, especially that authority that is acting in an irresponsible, even a reprehensible manner. So, as we gave one commentary earlier in the week, today, another one. This came after my lecture last night. It was Nick Snepperania's two-hour lecture on what happens when we choose not to use common sense and reason and intuition and good science to help us make decisions. We end up a victim, then, of the status quo. So we're going to deal with this today. So that article is entitled, Officially Sanctioned Pimps, Mainstream Media Subservience to Special Interest, Richard Gale, myself. It is posted on prn.fm, and please download it, read it, and share it with as many people as you can. You never know who might be able to do something with it to get this message out into the larger population. Also today I'll have a guest live on the air in the second part of our program. That guest is a medical doctor, and he writes a great deal on topics involving our well-being. So we're going to talk about the virus and what we're learning or not learning at this point. I'll be sharing additional information with you as the program goes on. But we begin with the latest on health and healing. According to Nihon University School of Dentistry, historically artichoke has been used as a medicine, in fact, since the 4th century BCE. Today, however, it's used in combination with other medicinal plants like turmeric, there's your curcumin, peppermint, and that's your mentha, piperita, and yarrow, Y-A-R-R-O, and that's your Achillea millefolium. Now, to make medicine for digestive complaints for promoting bile discharge and enhancing fat metabolism, that's what it does. But in a recent study, researchers at Nihon University School of Dentistry in Japan found another good use for artichokes. They focused on one of its active components and investigated its effects on human gingival fibroblasts stimulated by the lipopolysaccharide. And in the end, it made a big difference in helping to stimulate the immune response in one's mouth. So that's terrific. After all, a lot of diseases start in the mouth. The article was published in the Journal of Natural Medicine. And let's face it, gum diseases represent a major public health problem. How big is it? More than 50% of the entire world adult population. And this particular bacteria, this LPS bacteria, is a major inducer of inflammatory cytokines that promote bone destruction and in your mouth. So evidence suggests that periodontal diseases are involved in the onset and progression of several systemic diseases like pneumonia and diabetes. So, by helping the health of our mouth and immune system with something as simple as artichoke, and then curcumin, and then mint, they're inexpensive, easy to find, take them all three together. And that will increase the osteoclast activity or decrease it, I should say, which causes generalized bone loss. So you're helping deal with bone diseases like osteoporosis. You're helping strengthen the gums, helping the health of the gums and the bacteria. All good. Again, artichoke, mint, and curcumin. From the University of Kentucky comes a study about cinnamon and how cinnamon is associated with a decreased blood pressure in adults. And this was a systematic review and a meta-analysis of randomized controlled trials, meaning they took a look at a lot of different studies and they asked, what do they find in common in these 9 studies of over 641 participants? And they showed substantial reductions in both systolic blood pressure and diastolic blood pressure from using cinnamon, just regular old cinnamon. It doesn't have to be cayenne cinnamon. It doesn't have to be Jamaican cinnamon. It can be just cinnamon. I suggest maybe an eighth of a teaspoon put into your smoothie over a hot steel-cut oatmeal cereal. It would be terrific. From the University of Virginia comes a study about the COVID-19 virus and how your exercising every day can help protect you against deadly complications. Now, mind you, this is a good study from the University of Virginia School of Medicine, and they're simply saying it's very simple, uncomplicated. The more you exercise, the more you reduce the risk of acute respiratory distress syndrome, a major cause of death in patients with COVID-19 virus. A top exercise researcher reports on this, and he's urging people to exercise based upon his findings, which also suggest a potential treatment approach. So that's good news. And why? Well, it's because exercise helps stimulate lymphatic system to cause lymph system that collects debris and bacteria to flow out of the body. It increases the expulsion of toxins in the body. The sweating is good for you. And by the way, if we really wanted to help all hospital staff, and again, no one has talked about this, so let me just share this. In fact, just as we're speaking, I just saw Glenn, one of our workers here, driving in on a tractor with the newest state-of-the-art infrared sauna. And the science shows that when you get that temperature up around 140 degrees and you're in there with water and ideally a glass of grape juice or watermelon juice when you go into a sauna, and you're in there for about 40 minutes, your body temperature rises, and the infrared, especially the full-spectrum infrared, hits deep into the tissue, light into the tissue. You're getting a full spectrum, but that kills viruses of all types. So if we had saunas, single-person-use saunas, and you had like 10 of them, they're not expensive. I think this one cost me around $2,200. Done. It's made out of hemlock. You can get them out of spruce or hemlock. And so it's inexpensive to use. It's not a big energy drain, but it's really therapeutic. So if we were to put 10 of these or 20 into a hospital or 50, and you could go into there and sit once a day, do your sauna, if you're a nurse, if you're a doctor, if you're someone coming into contact with patients, that would make an enormous difference in helping them. Then if they were to spray colloidal silver in their mouth and nostril, in the inside of their barrier, hopefully it's 95 to 99, or on the outside at the same time, and then wear gloves, use proper hygiene, we could make a big difference. Also, if you really want to help the patients, use ozone therapy and vitamin C drips together. More and more science is on that, how it's happening. But in this particular study, the director of the Center for Skeletal Muscle Research at University of Washington, who's a cardiologist, took a look and found that it's making a big difference if they're using antioxidants that will trap free radicals and viruses produce free radicals. So the more viruses you have, the more free radicals you produce, the sicker you get. So you want to trap these free radicals. Well, guess what traps free radicals? Vitamin C and vitamin E and wheatgrass juice. So we need to get into the circulation more the antioxidants. And if every patient in every hospital in the world were given 50,000 units of vitamin D, upwards orally, diluted, meaning in a way that is just not straight ascorbic acid, which they'll probably have a stomach reaction to, but rather put it into a protein shake and put some vitamin A, 50,000 units of beta carotene in there at the same time, and then put, let's say, 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams of astragalus and maybe 10 drops of licorice extract, you're going to have an enormous benefit to that patient's immune system, trapping free radicals and turning off the cytokine storms that end up destroying the person's capacity to breathe in the lungs, requiring the lung machine. So you see, we're not even thinking what we can do to reverse this. We're just looking at better ways of treating with a medicine or a vaccine. Fine, if you have a good vaccine proven in good clinical trials against an actual placebo to benefit human beings, bring it forward and show us your evidence. But for those of us who are actual scientists and not hired prostitutes for the pharmaceutical industry or corporate shills that so many professors are and hence stay mute on the subject, is this really a good drug? And we need good drugs, a good drug or a good vaccine, then you're not going to tell the truth. We need honesty. Let me mention this. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people in this audience over a 15-year period visited the Tri-State Healing Center. We had over 23 clinicians there. It was the most comprehensive and successful healing center in American history. I defy anyone to show you, not the Atkins Center, not all these other centers. Those were mainly profit-making centers. Ours was not. In fact, no person was ever rejected because they couldn't afford it. About at any given time, one-third of all patients never paid a penny, including 1,200 people with full-blown AIDS. And that was my policy. No one's ever turned away. And yet we reversed every disease you could imagine, improved people's conditions beyond what anything medicine can do, and yet all of our staff were licensed, board-certified nurses and physicians and therapists. Not a single person has asked, how would you have done this? No one is called because they don't want this truth, because it's not patentable, it's not profitable. But could we use this? Could we benefit? You bet. More now than ever. Next up, in the University of Massachusetts Medical School comes a study about meditate before you sleep. Here's what you need to know. We become more desensitized to sleep deprivation and insufficiency in sleep, and it's taking a toll on our bodies, both in subtle and not-so-subtle ways. For obesity to heart disease, a significant effect of undersleeping and oversleeping can trigger serious health issues. Fortunately, there's meditation, an efficient method to correct disrupted sleep. Now, this is according to the University of Massachusetts Medical School. So according to the groundbreaking study conducted by the University of Massachusetts Medical School, 58% of people who experience insomnia improve their sleeping cycle through meditation. 91% of the participants who are under medication were able to reduce the dosage or stop the prescription entirely. And several months after, the majority of participants are already enjoying better sleep cycles, showing that meditation is indeed a potent tool to fight insomnia. And meditation improves our sleeping cycle in different ways. The most noticeable effect is how meditation relieves stress on our body. Well, to be more precise, meditation is effective against stress because it actuates our autonomic nervous system, which allows better sleep and deeper breathing and stronger digestion. And as our culture continues to develop, our nervous systems also begins to show signs of dysfunction and goes into survival mode. more than what is safe and necessary. Hence, meditation is like a human reset button that restores the natural order of our physiological state. So, try meditation before you go to bed at night, and you'll be able to get a deeper, more peaceful and restful sleep. And finally, the pharmacology analysis on what is called Zichan powder, Z-H-I-C-H-A-N, in the treatment of Parkinson's disease. This is from China, Japan Union Hospital and Jilin University. In lay language, Parkinson's disease is a very debilitating neurodegenerative disorder which is characterized by the degradation and subsequent loss of activity of the motor nerve system in the body. The disease is incurable at this time, though we have cured it, but for mainstream, it's incurable. And patients also tend to exhibit non-motor function disabilities like diseases that progress rapidly. Currently, the treatment modality almost always focuses on improving the symptoms after the onset. Well, Zichan is a Chinese herb. Again, that's Z-H-I-C-H-A-N, and it's been used for its medicinal properties to treat patients suffering from Parkinson's disease. And its beneficial effects have been attributed to its ability to regulate the expression of monoamine oxidase B and tyrosine hydrolase in the substantia nigra of the Parkinson's disease model rats, and it's been well documented. This is according to the doctor heading the Department of Neurology at the China-Japan Union Hospital. And they're at the forefront. They're doing good research. So they took the powder and they used it on patients and saw remarkable improvement. So this is just one more piece of the puzzle, and that's what we try to do. Oh, and by the way, from Federal University in Sao Paulo, Brazil, once again, we're finding that gluten is enemy number one for those with celiac disease. And now you can avoid gluten if you're paying attention. It's a chronic autoimmune illness, and it's triggered by the ingestion of gluten, which is a key protein in wheat and some other grains. And researchers have been exploring how gut bacteria, especially the bifido, B-I-F-I-D-O bacteria, could be used as a treatment. Now scientists publishing the results of the laboratory experiment in the Journal of the Agricultural and Food Chemistry report on specific types of bifidobacteria and how they work. Now, as you know, listening to this program, I talk about it all the time, how health begins in the intestine. Healthy, clean food, prebiotic and probiotic foods, you build legions, trillions of healthy bacteria. That is what starts your immune system on a path to health and healing and preventing disease. If you remember, I mentioned on a show earlier this week where every single day, 7 days a week for 15 years at the Tri-State Healing Center, I would sit and hold the hands of patients, especially those who are terminally ill, to give them comfort, to get that exchange of energy. And people had every disease imaginable. I've never been sick. No colds, no flu, nothing. Well, I'm not any different. Everyone in my family except my brother's dead, and that's 18 relatives, aunts and uncles and parents. And I have their genes. So by all discussion, if it's genetic, I would have been dead a long time ago. So why is it that I can be around sick people and not get sick? It's my immune system. There's no magic there. It's the immune system. The difference is I'm willing to say no to that which would harm my immune system. French fries, hot dogs, hamburgers, pizzas, colas, sugars of all types, processed and denatured foods. I emphasize healing, clean, beneficial foods going into my body. It's just good common sense and cause and effect, something your grandmother and father would have done without thinking twice about it. That builds beneficial bacteria or harmful bacteria if we make the wrong choices. And even if they stick to the strict gluten-free diet, celiac disease patients typically cannot reestablish the ideal gut microbiome on their own. In particular, the levels of bacteria, the bifidobacteria family, are lower in those with a condition. Therefore, get yourself some probiotics that are higher in the bifidobacteria strains because they break down gluten peptides. And what effects these smaller gluten-derived peptides would have on the immune system. So you're putting good nutrition so you get the right bacteria and it makes a difference. So that's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, I want to, before I go to my special commentary today, and after the commentary, feel free to call in and share your thoughts about it. We like to hear you on our talkback segment. Our talkback segment's 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. But I want to give you a couple numbers. You can watch today's video clips on going to youtube.com/PRNFM. youtube.com/PRNFM. Back in a moment with Judge Napolitano talking about his take on the coronavirus and how all the governmental agencies have overstepped their authority. Please stay with us.
And happy to be. Hey, Judge, thanks for joining us. So
you've
spent the last, well, the 20 years I've known you talking about civil liberties and how central they are to the American experiment. They're enshrined in our documents, of course. I haven't heard any talk about them recently. Are they still relevant?
Huh. You know, one of our colleagues sent me a cartoon of the framers signing the Constitution. And in this cartoon, Washington turns to Madison and says, "Let me get this straight. None of this counts if people get sick, right?" You know, sort of a humorous way of mocking what's happening today. Your analysis of Governor Whitmer could apply to nearly all the remaining 49 governors who assume that they have the power to crush individual liberties, violate the Constitution, and write laws. Well, they don't. Laws in this country are written by legislative branches after public hearings and debates. So there's a transparency. So we would know why she doesn't want you to buy garden hoses. There'd have to be a rational basis articulated for it. But when the executive branch takes upon itself the role of not just enforcing the law, but of making up new ones, and when in the process it crushes basic fundamental liberties like the right to travel and the right to worship, never mind on Easter Sunday, but on any time you want to worship, we are witnessing the slow death, the death in slow motion of civil liberties, because these governors, these petty tyrants, will use this power again and again until some courageous federal court or an outraged public stops them.
I'm so thankful that you pointed out it's not just Governor Whitmer. I mean, it's Governor Hogan in Maryland. It's Governor Klanrobes in Virginia. It's virtually all of them. Very quickly, do you think there's a mechanism for pulling them back a little bit now?
Hopefully it'll be outrage stirred up by the type of reporting that you and some of our colleagues have begun to be doing. And even some of our colleagues on the left have been doing some of this reporting. But basic human liberties are guaranteed in the Constitution. They can't even be taken away by the vote of a legislature, much less the command of a governor or a mayor. These executive orders look like orders and sound like orders. They're just guidelines. They don't have the force of law. There cannot be a criminal sanction for the failure to comply with them, because they are at their root just the whim of those in power, intended to enhance their power.
Yes.
They are not valid expressions of constitutional doctrine.
Okay. So you just heard Judge Napolitano, constitutional lawyer, giving his perspective on this, and I think it's very important. So what is happening now? Many people are engaged in overreach, and what becomes temporary then becomes permanent, and that's not acceptable. We should be concerned about it. In just a couple of minutes, Dr. Gary Kohls, K-O-H-L-S, will be my guest. And we'll be talking about what is and is not being done appropriately and properly concerning the coronavirus and its different implications. I want to see if Dr. Kohls is on the line now. And if he is, I just want to introduce him. But then I want to be able to... Oh, Dr. Kohls is on the line. Dr. Kohls, it's nice to have you with us today. And we're going to go to you in a moment. But before we go to you, I would like to share with you, your friends, and this audience, my concern about why we're not being told the truth. This is entitled Officially Sanctioned Pimps, Mainstream Media Subservience to Special Interest. Following this, we will hear what Dr. Kohls has to say on this. For the vast majority of Americans, their knowledge of the nation's domestic and foreign affairs takes a back seat to their responsibilities with their families and careers. Consequently, with fingers crossed, they must rely upon the media in the hope they will receive objective and accurate news and commentaries. It is natural for us to gravitate towards news personalities and sources that align with our own biased political, religious, and ideological beliefs. Most people turn to the mainstream media, such as the New York Times, the Washington Post, the networks, and cable television. Individuals such as Rush Limbaugh, Rachel Maddow, Sean Hannity, Lawrence O'Donnell, Tucker Carlson, Anderson Cooper, Laura Ingraham, and Glenn Beck, and those are just a small fraction of them, succeed in attracting a huge daily audience. These people are trusted because viewers build a rapport with them and believe they have insights into issues that are not readily available because the general public is not given the same access to the same information. For many others who, in distrust and disgust, reject mainstream media, its ideological-driven internet interest sites, written either by amateur writers or disgruntled citizens who distort and spin facts to conform with their personal illusions. Hence, not only do you get misinformation on the internet and on Google and Wikipedia and Facebook, but you also get it everywhere else in the mainstream media. Hence the epidemic rise of fake news on both the right and the left, both the mainstream and alternative media. Before the advent of Fox News in 1996 to create an alternative voice to the dominant media's complacency favoring Bill Clinton's presidency, there still remained a veneer of independent integrity among mainstream television programs. For example, Edward R. Murrow, who was a thorn in the establishment side, and Walter Cronkite, a voice we trusted as Americans. However, this assumption that is also false. In 1975, Congress had a committee called the Church Committee, and they commenced investigations into illegal and unconstitutional activities within the CIA, FBI, and the National Security Agencies and the IRS. The committee's findings shocked the nation and included assassination plots to knock off foreign political leaders that might appear as accidents or suicides or heart attacks. The CIA's covert operations in Chile in support of the brutal dictator Pinochet. MKUltra's mind control experiments. But perhaps one of the most shocking discoveries, which received little to no attention, was the National Security Agency's Operation Shamrock that worked directly with the heads of the major telecommunications companies to intercept and share information in order to create a watch list. This operation started in 1945 and continued completely unbeknownst to the American public. The final report entitled Foreign and Military Intelligence states, quote, the CIA currently maintains a network of several hundred foreign individuals around the world who provide intelligence for the CIA and at times attempt to influence opinion through the use of covert propaganda, meaning they were journalists. They were television personalities, radio personalities. These individuals provide the CIA with direct access to a large number of newspapers and periodicals, scores of press news services, news agencies, radio and television stations, commercial book publishers, etc. End quote. This also includes Hollywood and the entertainment industry. Uncovering the government's largest covert surveillance program eventually resulted in President Carter signing the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, an important effort that has been categorically ignored or co-opted ever since. Although the act was intended to put a halt on intelligence influence over the media airwaves and publications, it has not only continued but worsened. For example, during the past two decades, it was exposed that CNN employed military psyop specialists in its Southeast TV bureau. They have also infiltrated NPR. According to Watergate reporter Carl Bernstein, quote, the CIA's use of the American news media has been much more extensive than agency officials have acknowledged publicly or in closed sessions with members of Congress, end quote. Even Pulitzer Prize recipients, Bernstein revealed, were on the CIA's payroll writing fake stories. Among some of the incidences of the CIA's control over the media are, in 1977, Daniel Short wrote about CBS being infiltrated by the CIA. Career CIA officials recruited out of the press corps, such as former CIA director Richard Helms, who ran the United Press Berlin Bureau. Henry Luce, founder of Time and Life magazines, was a close associate of CIA director Alan Dulles and permitted CIA operatives to work in his news facilities. Radio Free Europe was primarily a CIA operation run by former Wall Street attorney Frank Wisner, who owned executives in the New York Times, Washington Post, Newsweek, CBS, and among others. It's estimated there are 53 international media entities named as CIA fronts. For decades, the CIA has worked closely with Hollywood and employed liaison officers, meaning if you wanted to get a film made and it had anything to do with national affairs, foreign governments, domestic politics, you went to the CIA liaison officer. They would provide you with the truth, such as in the movie Argo and Zero Dark Thirty. Those were actually scripted by CIA writers. In 1999, the CIA founded NQTEL, a venture capital firm that develops information technology used by companies such as Facebook and Google. Robert McChesney at the University of Illinois Institute of Communications Research is a longtime critic of network media and how it compromises democracy by controlling and manipulating knowledge to fuel and govern public ignorance. This includes its methods of politicizing society, the globalization of capital's predatory agenda, and its relationship with foreign policy, militarism, and imperialism. According to McChesney, American journalism today is, quote, deplorable, end quote. There's your real deplorables, Hillary and Bill. Add yourself into that list. And the primary victim has been truth, which no longer exists in the mainstream media outlets. Unfortunately, since the Church Report, the media has increasingly been further compromised and corrupted. Major corporations, investors, and federal agencies use the airwaves and publishing houses as a psychological weapon against public critical thought. At no time has it been held accountable for any of its misleading the nation. With all of the different crises Americans and the rest of the global community now face, a likely international economic collapse, climate change catastrophes, failing health care, and the present coronavirus pandemic, the average citizen rarely reflects upon those who have exceeded their power of judgment and who are paid to conduct in-depth research on our behalf. There is still remaining genuine journalists and investigative reporters. who are not compromised and refuse to lie to the American public. In the past, yes, we had Sinclair Lewis, I.F. Stone, and Jack Anderson. Today, there is Seymour Hersh, Chris Hedges, Abby Martin, Max Blumenthal, John Pilger, and Greg Palast amongst them. But all of these voices are essentially silenced today and excluded from social platforms like Facebook and Google. They are pillared and libeled on Wikipedia, and you will never see them invited to testify on truth's behalf before Congress. Yet repeatedly, these individuals have been correct on all the major issues, while the full spectrum of corporate media has been habitually wrong on all the same issues. And so it is. Therefore, we might briefly glance back on the media's past history of fabrications that fall in line with the intelligence agenda and acknowledge their consistent deceit and lies over the decades. Back in 1964, the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution gave the president the authority to wage war without a formal declaration from Congress. It has been a precedent misused by every single president ever since who have desired to initiate armed conflict. While Syria's Assad has been categorically blamed by the media for using chemical weapons on its citizens, it was Seymour Hersh who procured from a high-ranking U.S. official that the Turks used and carried out the attacks of lethal weapons and then blamed it on Assad's government to advance the United States' hegemonic desires and regime change. And when was the media ever covering crimes committed by the FBI accurately? Examples: efforts to attempt to enforce Martin Luther King to commit suicide. That was the FBI. The creation of faux planning attacks by terrorists after 9/11. The planned attack on fuel lines at JFK Airport, planting a dummy bombs in subways in New York City and Washington, D.C., generating schemes to bomb synagogues and shoot Stinger missiles at military aircraft by men recruited in Newburgh, New York. All of these were staged in order to entrap people by the FBI. Bush's Patriot Act that gave government sweeping powers to spy on virtually every American and violate the public's right of privacy. And, of course, let us not forget the Obama legacy, a long litany of policies favoring the deep state and private interests that the liberal media simply kowtowed along to, TARP and the big bank bailouts, deregulation of Wall Street as part of the financial reform, silence on repealing Citizens United to prevent the elite from influencing politics, increasing military aggression in Syria, Libya, Yemen, Honduras, Somalia, and Ukraine, huge private contracts to keep Americans under surveillance, pushing nuclear power and hydrofracking, and, of course, Obamacare to keep private insurers' coffers overflowing. Obama's DARK Act received no media attention but removed state rights to protect their populations by informing them whether foods containing genetically modified food ingredients or not. The changes in the Fifth Amendment in 1996 permit civil assets forfeitures. Increasingly, police departments impose assault asset forfeitures in the hundreds of millions of dollars per year from motorists not charged with any crimes, not given any search warrants. These are all signs of a successful police state. In the meantime, America's critical thinking skills rapidly decay. A once literate society with the world's best universities is now functionally illiterate. Support for privatized charter schools, which removes funds from public schools, is furthering the class divide. We have an overly medicated society where ADHD is so rampant that children wear the diagnosis as a badge of honor for acceptance among their peers. The list is endless, and the Trump White House is adding to it exponentially. And where is the mainstream media in all of this? Pimping for the deep state and special interest. The title of the article, which is now posted on PRN.fm, is Officially Sanctioned Pimps, Mainstream Media Surveillance to Special Interest Groups, Richard Gell, myself. Welcome to our program, Dr. Gary Coles. First, if you would like to address my commentary, please do so. And then, if you would, please explain why, as a very important lifelong clinical practitioner in medicine, as well as an avid reader of medical literature and science, what is right or what is wrong with what we're doing concerning the Corona 19 virus. The forum is yours.
Okay. Thank you for the invitation. I'm humbled to be in your presence. Thank you very much. Yes, I totally agree with your commentary. And in fact, I just printed out the thing you did, the big lie, the stench of mainstream corporate media that you posted 2 days ago. And I sent it out to a couple thousand people just in the last half hour or so. So you should get some response to that. Couldn't agree more with your commentary, and also that the one you did just a couple days ago. It's really sad that you and I are victims of censorship, you know, because we have so many truths to express. My own path, I guess, started while I started a practice of medicine that was devoted to psychiatric patients that had, all of whom had become addicted to their psychiatric medications and had never been advised of the possibility that they would become addicted to their medications. They all had been misdiagnosed because all of them, virtually all of them, had been victims of some form of violence or toxicity or some other cause that you could attribute to the root cause of their illness, but they had never been told that. So my practice, which I lasted for about 10 years until I retired about 10 years ago, was mainly helping the people safely get off of their medications. And I had to do that through a variety of nutritional approaches, which you are expert at. Can't really go into that at this time. That would be the subject of a two-hour discussion, just that alone, how I managed to do that. But what struck me, of course, was that the pharmaceutical industry was behind all of that. They had propagandized the psychiatric industry to comply with the recommendations to reflexively put people on toxic medications and then not explain to the psychiatrists or physicians how toxic Prozac was or any of the antipsychotics, et cetera, et cetera. So there was a huge conspiracy, provable conspiracy, not just a theory, provable conspiracy between the pharmaceutical industry and the psychiatric industry and the medical establishment, all of whom had tremendous profits accrued because of that. So therefore I had to be suspicious of the corporations that were behind this. They were doing so much damage to patients, and the patients weren't aware of it. The doctors were wanted to ignore the possibilities, and the mainstream media rarely, if ever, raised the issue to warn anybody about the dangers. And while I was doing that practice, when I had a little more time, I became a regular columnist for our local alternative news weekly, the Duluth Reader, here in Duluth, Minnesota, which is a small market. It's about 85,000 people. The county that we're in northern Minnesota is called St. Louis County. There's 200,000 people in there. And, by the way, only 40 deaths from the COVID, so-called COVID virus, which accounts for a 0.00001 incidence of deaths. But that's another issue that we can address a little bit and a little later in this interview. So then I became a regular columnist and decided that it was my duty as an ethical physician to warn people about some of these issues. And I call my column Duty to Warn. So if any listeners want to access any of my articles, you can type in Duty to Warn. Maybe don't do it on Google, but maybe DuckDuckGo, because the important articles that I have written rarely ever show up on Google, which is, of course, a Microsoft and big corporate entity. So I wrote a lot about the psychiatric industry, the dangers of the pharmaceutical drugs, and it soon became obvious that the pharmaceutical industry was doing the same thing about vaccines, which is a strength of yours. I know I have one of your books. I couldn't find it in my library right now, but I read one of your books that you wrote maybe 10 or 12 years ago, which had a large section in there about the dangers of vaccines. It taught me a lot. So, therefore, my duty to warn extended from pharmaceutical industry and the psychiatric industry and the medical establishment into vaccines, in which, of course, there is zero discussion, honest discussion in the mainstream media. Everybody who understands the science behind the destructive nature of the ingredients in vaccines and the frequency and the amount that infants are getting in our in all across the world, especially the well, every nation, I guess. So therefore, I understood that there is a conspiracy between the pharmaceutical industry and the medical industry and the media industry and then the governments as well. And of course, you know, going down that rabbit hole, there's just tremendous amounts of conflicts of interest everywhere, especially among governmental bureaucrats whose agencies are infiltrated by industry. CDC, Bobby Kennedy Jr. says, you know, 40% of the some significant minority of the money that funds the CDC and the FDA and the World Health Organization comes from industry, and they do not have they have profits in mind and not the health and safety of the public. So I'm sort of at where you're at because I've been writing this weekly column for the last 10 years. So I guess that amounts to 500 columns I've done, and many of them deal with the infiltration of corporate money and the interest of the wealthy people trying to expose that to my readership. And now, of course, with COVID, the so-called COVID has been overemphasized. The incidence has been obviously overemphasized. I went to the literature, spent a few hours looking at what the reported incidences, and which, of course, since there is a huge number of unknown number, significant percentage, though, of these tests that are that give false negatives and also false positives, so nobody knows what the true incidence or even the death rate are, because people who, elderly people especially, who were terminally ill, if they happen to be tested positive for COVID and they die, the cause of death will be COVID and not the terminal illness that they were victimized by. So just for example, in the United States, as of a few days ago, there were, even if there were 500,000 cases, that amounts to a tiny fraction of 1% of the population that has even been diagnosed with the illness. And again, those are falsely exaggerated numbers. That's less than a fraction of 1% of the people in the United States have COVID, and you'd think that half of them, according to how breathless the reports are, you'd think that people are being misled to think that they have a 1 in 2 chances of getting infected if they don't stay home. And that's just the United States. So what I calculated then was how many per million, just as the death rate, the death incidence in the United States is 15 people out of every million Americans have died from the coronavirus. 15 out of 100, out of a million. That means 999,985 people out of every million Americans have not died from coronavirus. That's a figure that we never hear up in my neck of the woods. Our local newspaper, every day they publish in big headlines, there were 4 more cases of COVID diagnosed today in the last 24 hours, which now, of course, that amounts to, you know, about 0.00001% of the population here in St. Louis County. So anyway, so the mainstream media is doing its propaganda very efficiently to frighten us all down to be willing to acquiesce to orders from our governors or our mayors or our presidents who are being given, getting their information from co-opted bureaucrats who are being paid for by big pharmaceutical industries. So we're all getting bamboozled, basically. And my point is not that there isn't a virus out there that is maybe wounding severely and even killing some people, but the people who are succumbing to this are the mostly the terminally ill. And any, which brings to mind, there is a chart that I came across online that tells us how many, what the death rate is, the daily death rate is of every country in the United, on the world. And every day in the United States, 7,755 people die every day. 7,755 people die every day of a variety, you know, any illness that, or just old age, you know, being terminally ill with being elderly. That's part of that. Every year, 22,830,000 people die in the United States. And this is just year after year after year, whether there's an epidemic or not an epidemic, 7,700 people die every day in the United States. In Japan, 3,600. In Germany, 2,500 people die every day. That was last year, this year, and next year, whether there's a so-called epidemic or not. So I thought that was really important to acknowledge that, that people die anyway. And now if there's an agenda out there by the pharmaceutical industry that wants to promote universal mandated vaccinations, they'll want to not let people know that people are dying all the time anyway, and they'll want to overemphasize the incidence and the death rates.
We're up to the end of our program, but I would like to invite you back for a full hour on our next Progressive Commentary Hour, which is Tuesday evenings from 7 to 8 Eastern Standard Time, where you'll have an opportunity to go into some of this in greater detail. And so if you're available, please let us know. We'd be happy to invite you for the full hour. All right?
Let me talk to Richard, and we'll set that up.
Thank you very much, Dr. Coles. Nice to hear from you. Dr. Gary Coles, my guest. Thank you all for listening. Stay tuned now for Utrecht's Lead. Have a nice day, everyone.